Celebrate this Easter season with New Hope Oahu. Join me, Pastor Wayne Cadera, on Good Friday, April 19th at 5 and 7 p.m. And on Easter, for Saturday services, it's 3, 5, and 7, and Sunday, 7, 9, and 11. Be inspired by worship from New Hope Oahu music, heartfelt testimonies, and a powerful message of hope. For more information, you can go to enewhope.org, and we'll see you this Easter at New Hope Oahu as we welcome you to our home.
From the campus of New Hope Christian College, welcome to Words of New Hope.
You see, because we live in a society or a nation surrounded by 250 million people, and many of them asking the same question, does God have anything to say? Is he really real? Did God create man, or did man create God?
Aloha and welcome to Words of New Hope with Dr. Wayne Cordero of New Hope Christian Fellowship. Today, a message entitled, The One Another's of the Cross. Pastor Wayne will show us how Christ applied his riches to our debt when he died on the cross. But you'll also learn the responsibility that we have to accept his great offer. Here is Pastor Wayne with a message entitled, The One Another's of the Cross.
You can tell a lot about people and the way they live by their last words before they die. It tells you a lot about the way they live. Like the lady and the man that was sitting out in their lanai on about the 10th floor of their condominium, and they see a guy go by their window, whoosh! And the woman turns to the husband and says, another Portuguese man just jumped. And the husband says, how do you know? She says, because his last words were, so far, so good. You can tell a lot about somebody just by their last words. I'm going to give you a quiz of some famous last words. See if you can get these. Here's the first one. Who said as their last words, give me liberty or give me death? Patrick Henry, very good. Who said, I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country? Nathan Hale, very good. Someone said, Manuel Souza. No. His last words was, what was that telephone number for 911 again? But I think the greatest last words of all were the ones uttered by Jesus Christ, firstly in his final recorded prayer and then his final words on the cross. His final recorded prayer was in John 17 when he prays and he says, Father, I pray that even as I am one in you and you are one in me, I pray that the church might be one so that the world might believe that you have sent me. You see, because we live in a society or a nation surrounded by 250 million people, and many of them asking, does God have anything to say? Is he really real? And so many people are asking, did God create man, or did man create God? It was a historian in the time of the Christian persecution under Nero's era in the Roman Empire, and if you know anything about history, which after that last quiz, but if they didn't worship that emperor, it was punishable by death as a crime, because the way the Roman Empire almost forced allegiance to the emperor is they would make the emperor a demigod, which means half God, half man. Well, the Christians would say, no, we're going to worship the true God. Well, that just enraged the Roman Empire, and they would round up these Christians and persecute them and bring them to the crime of death. And the way they would do that often is they would use them somewhat as sport in the Colosseum. People would come and fill this place. A huddled group of Christians would be down at one end, and they would nip them off through the lions charging them one by one, almost as sport. And you would hear the chanting and the jeering and the people yelling and screaming. And as they would let out one lion, one of them would come from behind this huddled group and take 5 or 10 paces before them, in front of them, and they would almost, as it were, invite the mauling of the lion just to save these. After that bloodbath, the people would jeer and chant and rant for the next, and they'd let out the next lion, and another one would come out and take that as a sacrifice to save the others. And this would continue and ensue until this bloodbath was a spattering of blood all over the Colosseum's floor. And when they would be all dead, they would leave, but not nearly so noisily as when they arrived. There would almost be an eerie silence as they'd leave this Colosseum. And his words remain with us today that he's inscribed. He said, "See how these Christians love one another." How did this good news become so relevant, so impacting to him? A miracle like Daniel in the lion's den? It was by the love of the people for one another. And today, as we come to the cross, I want us to remember that we're all part of the same body. And that's why he gave that bread. He says, "This is my body." And as we all take it, we all are reminded that we're all part of the same body. It doesn't mean that there will not be mistakes that'll be made. It does not mean that we won't lock horns from time to time. But God's way, founded in the cross, is to restore and to reconcile, not to disqualify and judge. And if we understand anything about the good news, we must be a part of God's plan by restoring and reconciling, because the feud was ended at the cross. And as we all draw towards the same cross, we find that our lives are drawn closer to one another. A story is told by a student about a Christian professor who was known for his elaborate object lessons, and they were studying about secular counseling therapy. And what they would do is they would get a picture of someone they disliked, and this is how the therapy would go. They'd just scream at it and yell at it and call it all kinds of names to kind of get your anger out. I don't know, a primal scream or something. I don't know. So anyway, what this professor said was, "Let's do this. Take someone who's your favorite enemy, someone you dislike the most, someone that's betrayed you, hurt you in some way. Draw a picture of that someone 2x3 poster size. And then what we're going to do is we're going to throw stuff at it. How's that? And then when we're done, we're going to evaluate whether that therapy does any good as we compare it with Christian counseling." So the student said, "All right, let's try it. I know one." They started drawing another one, drew another. And so after he collected them, he said, "All right, we're going to throw darts at these. But before we do, I'll hang them up on the wall. You take a break. And when you come back, we'll start this therapy." "All right," they said. And they went out. Well, when they came back, it looked like a human archery range with targets in front of people they disliked. Each one had a stack of darts. And the professor said, "Just go for it." Some of them threw darts so hard that it ripped some of the paper and was filled with darts. And they said, "Okay, let's all sit down." And they sat down, and one guy said, "Yeah, I feel good. Then the professor said, "Well, let's evaluate and see, does it really solve anything and does it really change us?" And as he began to talk, he'd pull some of the darts out. And as he'd take away the poster paper of that person whom they drew, under each page and under each paper was a picture of Jesus Christ with holes all in his face and some ripped. And there was a still hush that came over the classroom. And the professor read this scripture that I'm going to ask you to read aloud with me out of Matthew 25. Would you read it with me? Go. "And the king will answer and say to them, 'Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me.'" Before we're so quick to throw darts, remember, Wayne, he says, "You love me only as much as the one you love the least." Think of that person. That's the true measurement of my love for God. Forgiveness does not mean that he tolerates my sin. It doesn't mean that he endorses my sin. Because you see, when Christ gives you forgiveness, it's not something that cleans your slate so you can mess it up some more. Freedom is defined as all those things I don't have to do anymore. Not free to do all the things I want to. Free not to do all those things I used to do anymore. I'm free from having to look good with my friends by toking up a joint. I don't have to do that anymore. I'm free from that. I'm free from having to fend for myself. I'm free from having to look good. I'm free from all of that. God sets you free so that you don't have to be imprisoned by all those things anymore. Jesus gave forgiveness on the cross, but it doesn't mean everyone in the world has received that. He has made that available. Now the ball is in our court as to whether or not we will say yes to his forgiveness or no, I don't need that. That's the only option left. He's purchased forgiveness. He's made it available. Now the ball is in our court. There's going to be times you will give forgiveness. Now they may not receive it, but the Lord says that's not your responsibility to make them receive it. Our responsibility is to give forgiveness, which simply means this: I see that you're more important and I raise you above your action. Now that person can reject it, that's up to them. But do you see how that keeps your heart clear? It also issues forgiveness because you're saying relationships are more important than mistakes. Now the other person may not receive it, but I'm going to keep giving that out just like Christ did. And even though some didn't receive it, he still gives that out. Forgive as Christ forgave you. And that forgiveness has to go out often. You know why? Because relationships are living entities. Relationships aren't dead things. They're alive things. See, if you have a silk plant here, you don't need to maintain it. But if it's an alive plant, you have to water it, check it for aphids, all of these kinds of things. Relationships are living things, so it is not low maintenance, folks. Relationships are high maintenance. Why? Because they're living. They're growing. They're changing. Vulnerable to attack. Same thing as if you wanted just a stuffed animal on your shelf staring at you all night while you're sleeping, that's one thing. It's cuddly and nice, but it's not alive. But if you get a real dog, then you got to feed it, you got to wash it, you got to clean up the doo-doos that it leaves behind, because they're going to make some of those. And the same thing is true with relationships. It's alive. And so there's going to require a lot of maintenance. And forgiveness is that which keeps relationships alive. Stop forgiving one another and watch how quickly that relationship dies. Because it's alive and it requires maintenance. It's high maintenance. It's okay though. And once you understand that, it's all right. And forgiveness is incredibly important. It keeps relationship alive. Because people will sometimes say things just inadvertently and it might have a razor corner on it. And though they think it's funny, you might not, because it's received differently from the way it's given. Someone will come by you and say, hey, you haven't lost much weight lately, have you? See you later. You want to go, come back here, punch you. If you don't quickly give forgiveness to that, it's all right. Just let it go. You'll lose 2 or 3 nights of sleep over that one comment, won't you? Someone will meet you, hey, I haven't seen you in a long time. Oh, I haven't seen you either, Wayne. Man, you've aged a lot. See you. Come back here, punk. See, if I quickly don't give forgiveness, that relationship starts to die. Isn't that right? It starts at that moment. It starts to die. What keeps relationships alive? The power of forgiveness. Now, there's going to be times where you're going to have to make some corrections with each other because love is not weak. But how do you do that? I want you to know that love holds each other accountable to God's likeness and is committed to seeing his likeness increase more and more in each other. But the way we do it is very important. Now hear this word. This is going to be very important, especially if you're a parent or you're an overseer or you have people under your jurisdiction. I need you to hear this. Is there a correction that's going to be needed at times? Absolutely. Well, how do you do it? Would you write in your notes, correcting is exchanging error, would you write that in there, and replacing it with value. Let's read the scripture. Brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, You who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness. Underline the word spiritual. Here is the lesson. I need you to hear this very carefully. If you will catch this, this will utterly transform you as a parent or you as an overseer. Now, we do need to hold each other accountable from time to time because we all need correcting. But each time I correct my son, or each time I correct someone, each time I remove an error, because we're humans, we have roots attached to that action. Because maybe someone did the best they could. And when I pull that thing out, I also rip away some of their self-esteem. Whenever you correct somebody, you take some of their value is diminished a bit. Their self-esteem is worn away, is plucked away, is ripped out a little bit. Well, if you keep doing that, what happens is this person, after being corrected so many times, he feels valueless. His self-esteem drops. Here is the spiritual principle God is talking about restoring or exchanging value for error. He's saying each time you take away error, you need to replace it with something of equal or greater value. That when I discipline my son, I just don't pull stuff out of him, my daughter, but I make sure that value is inputted and I exchange something. Otherwise, if someone is constantly being corrected without understanding this principle, you'll watch after a while, they will run away from dodge correction. They'll justify, rationalize, lie, because it's too painful, and you keep taking my self-esteem and value away. Let me give you this illustration, sort of like this. You've seen movies like this where there's a master jewelry thief, and say there's a 50-carat, 100-carat diamond, this huge thing worth millions of dollars, on display somewhere. And people with tuxes come and look at, ooh, and ah. And then at night, this jewelry thief comes in, and he sees it in this glass enclosed case, and it's on a display table. That what he remembers and what others may not realize is that this is not just a table it's sitting on. It is a delicate precision scale. And any displacement of weight will set off 50 alarms, steel trap doors, and 18 pit bulls will be released. So what these thieves do is they calculate to the exact ounce the weight of that diamond, and then they have a bag of sand or something, you've seen it, and they take it like this, and they go, and they run off. Well, the same principle, if you'll use your imagination, the same principle is true, except it's the opposite. When you correct someone, you're taking something that is worthless and you're replacing it with something of value. So it doesn't upset them. To say, you're doing A already, let me help you do A plus. Just know that I'm not able to allow you to continue with this kind of action or what you said to your mom, Aaron. I can't let you do that. I love you too much. You're too precious of a boy to allow that kind of character to take root in you. And Dad's going to discipline you for it. But Dad loves you. And that's why I need you to see how important this discipline is. And then I say, so turn over. You get three of these things. And then when it's done, I hug him, pray with him, let him cry for a while. And I remember then in about 15 minutes, he comes out, hi, Dad, hi, Mom, and he's just fine. You cannot just pull something way out of anger and leave a puka, a valuelessness. And if we will all understand that, then if people correct you, after a while, correction becomes something that helps you to become more valuable. When we who are spiritual, not that you've arrived, but those that understand spiritual principles understand displacing error with something of value. Do you understand how much more valuable we'll start to become? And we will not run from accountability. We will turn to accountability. Jesus did that with Peter. After Peter betrayed the Lord, denied him three times, we find them together on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus looked at him and he could have said, "Hey, idiot, I can't believe you did that." Instead, he said, "Peter, do you love me?" Peter said, "Well, you know, Lord, I really love you, but I really messed up." "No, do you love me?" "Yeah, Lord, I love you." "Performance was poor." "Do you love me?" "Yes, Lord." "Feed my sheep." "You mean you're restoring me? Do you love me?" "Yeah, Lord, I love you." "Tend my lambs." You mean I can be a part of your plan again?" "Peter, do you love me?" "Yeah, Lord, I love you." "I messed up. Do you love me?" "Yeah, your heart is so good. Tend my sheep." Was he corrected? Oh, yes. But was he restored? Oh, yes. You see, there was something displaced and something of greater value put in. The cross, the Lord examples all of that. And not only does he exchange that error, our sin, replace it with value, his salvation, but finally, it was at the cross that his final words were, "It is" what? "Finished." It's sort of like he's just saying, "We win." It's like this. Let's say that if the score is 2-2, last inning, and it's either going to be a tie game, but you're last at bat. The pitch is thrown. Full count. You close your eyes, clench your teeth, and you swing as hard as you can. If you strike out, the game is over. You hit the ball instead, and when you open your eyes, it's sailing over the outfield fence. Home run. Yay! The people in the grandstand on your side stand up and they holler, "We won!" However, even though it's over the fence, what do you still have to do to validate that home run? You got to still what? You got to touch the bases. But it's already done. It's already done. And you watch a guy hit a home run. He doesn't barrel down to first, slide into second, push the shortstop out of the way, slide to third, punch the catcher on the way through, come over and slide into home. No, 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 no. It's done. He still has to touch the bases. But it's sort of like this. It's sort of like the Lord himself knocked the ball out of the park. Then he turns to us and says, "Go touch the bases. There's responsibilities that you still have to have. You're going to be a dad, a mom, a son, a daughter, a student, young lady, young man, grandfather, grandmother. You're going to have to touch some bases. But remember, we won." If you're here today and you've never made that decision, the Lord would say that to you as well. It is finished, that he paid your debt. And as you say, "Lord, that's what I want," then his performance is applied to your debt. But that's your decision. He's made that clear. Let's say I went into a bank and I borrowed $1 million because I'm going to invest it. And the banker said, "You know, it's got a pretty stiff penalty that if you don't pay it back on this day next year, you get thrown in jail. That's penalty." I say to the banker, "No problem. You put whatever you want on that as far as penalty, because by this time next year, I will be a rich man, multimillionaire. I can pay you back that $1 million, no problem." But as you know, our Dow has dropped, so I invested in our stock market and I lose it all. A year later, I come back. The banker says, "You have the money?" "You know what the contract says." Just then, a filthy rich man walks in the back door, Elwin Ahu, and he comes. And he says to the banker, "How you doing?" "Oh, sir." And everybody comes to attention. "Yes, sir. Hello, sir." "Hey, I know this guy. Wayne, how are you, Wayne? What's going on?" "Well, the banker said, you know, he borrowed $1 million last year. Today he was supposed to pay it back." "Is that right, Wayne?" "Well, wait a minute," Elwin says. "You know that I have enough money to buy 15 banks. And so $1 million is like pocket change to me. I tell you what, since Wayne is my friend, why don't you apply my riches to his debt?" The banker says, "Well, that's fine, sir, but that's really not a decision between you and me. It's really a decision between you and Wayne, whether or not he wants your riches applied to his debt." So Elwin turns to me and says, "Okay, Wayne, what do you think? You want me to?" "Oh, I reach in my pocket. Please." And so Elwin says, okay, market paid. Paid in full. If you've never made that decision, oh, do it now. Do it. It'll be the most eternal decision you'll ever make.
Celebrate this Easter season with New Hope Oahu. Join me, Pastor Wayne Cadera, on Good Friday, April 19th at 5 and 7 p.m. And on Easter, for Saturday services, it's 3, 5, and 7, and Sunday, 7, 9, and 11. Be inspired by worship from New Hope Oahu music, heartfelt testimonies, and a powerful message of hope. For more information, you can go to enewhope.org, and we'll see you this Easter at New Hope Oahu as we welcome you to our home.